Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. Help for HD Live is brought to you by Help for HD International and is made possible by a generous education grant from our sponsors, Teva Pharmaceutical and Griffin Foundation. Today, we have Therese Crutcher-Marin. Oh, hopefully I said that right. Therese, who is a master in healthcare administration, is retired from Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice, having worked in healthcare for over 20 years. She is publishing her first nonfiction book, a heartfelt memoir, whose proceeds will be going to the Huntington's Disease Society of America. She lives in Auburn with her husband, John, who is a survivor sibling of a family devastated by Huntington's disease. I got the pleasure of meeting Therese a couple weeks ago at an event in Sacramento, and I'm so excited that she is on the radio with us today to talk about her story and her book. So welcome, Therese.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, we are excited. So let's jump right into the show and tell us, how is Huntington's disease a part of your life?
Well, the secret in my husband's family, which was HD, it was discovered in 1978. John and I were college sweethearts, and we planned to marry. And his three sisters, Marcia, Laura, and Cindy, they were at a place in their life where they wanted to know what happened to their mother, and their father never, ever told them why she was in Napa State Hospital for 20 years. So they reached out to their aunt, who they hadn't had contact with since they were children, their mother's sister, and the story came out that another aunt had Huntington's, two uncles had Huntington's, their grandfather, their great-grandmother. It went back, you know, generations and generations. So, you know, with that information, you know, our lives were changed. And since John became at risk at that time, Huntington's has been my companion really for, you know, 38 years. And every decision John and I have made, Huntington's was factored into that.
Sure.
John's three sisters, they were very, very close. They were my good friends, and they all died because of Huntington's disease. So it's had a huge impact, you know, on my life, and it's still in my life. And I think folks may think that all my thoughts were always negative or fearful because of Huntington's, but Huntington's kept me present, and it kept me focused every day on the joy that I had in my life and the love that John and I shared and the special bond that was created between us because of Huntington's. And John and I really made a promise to each other through the years that we wouldn't sweat the small stuff because it wasn't important and life was really too precious to us. And so
that's very interesting. Very cool.
And when we thought about Huntington's, we decided we were going to rename Huntington's in our life, and it was hope, because hope is what kept us going through the years.
Wow. And he sounds like an amazing man that went through a lot losing his sisters. Yeah. And I just actually saw pictures. You guys went on a trip, it looks like.
And it was our celebratory trip because we wanted to celebrate to the world that John's test was negative for Huntington's, because we've lived for 38 years not knowing. And
right.
Our children, you know, we've had parties and all, but we wanted to go away together and just bask in this happiness that we feel. And even though John, you know, 60 years old, we didn't know for sure that he would be negative. And it's like this weight has been lifted off of our shoulders. And, of course, you worry about your children. So
sure.
That's gone.
Yeah.
So we went to Greece.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful and peaceful. And just we had the time of our life.
That's fantastic. And and that's so interesting. So he was the only boy of three sisters.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And was he the oldest or?
He's the youngest.
Oh, he's the youngest.
And so he had
baby.
Three older sisters that used to, you know, really, his older sister used to really kind of beat up on him. And even though they were very close, and they were close because they really had a very unhealthy, you know, childhood because they didn't have a mother at home. And you know, it was very challenging to their father. And so they only had each other. And even though they fought and threw knives at one another and all that, you know, they still were very, very close. And they never tattled on each other. They stuck together, you know, when they did something wrong and the dad was asking them what happened. They always stuck to the same story.
That's siblings. That's awesome that he has those memories of them. And,
yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about your husband.
John is an architect, graduated from Cal Poly Pomona. We met in college in 1975, and we had a long-distance relationship because he went to Cal Poly Pomona and I went to Sac State. And so we, you know, we fell in love, and we knew we wanted to be married. And, you know, he's a wonderful man, wonderful father, since he did not really have a present father. And no mother at home. He has been a terrific dad. We live in Auburn, and we both worked in Auburn, and so we had jobs where we could, you know, get our children where they needed to go. And he was so involved with the kids. And I say to people at times when the kids were born and they were little newborns, he would hold them and he could get them calmed down. And, you know, he should have been the mother, I thought. Because he could put them on his chest and lay there with them and comfort them. So he's a very kind-hearted man, as were all of his sisters, you know, too.
Yeah.
And his grandmother raised him. And that was the real nurturing person in his life.
Mm. So that leads me to my next question. I want to kind of hear about these three sisters of his. It sounds like they were really amazing women.
Mm-hmm. They were.
Yeah. So can you tell us little stories about the three of them, like individually?
Oh, sure,
I don't want
yeah.
to, I know that you, yeah.
Yes, I will. Marsha, Laura, and Cindy were their names. Laura was the oldest. And all three of these women were just terrific women, and they were very strong women. And I think about them every day, you know, and I truly miss them because they were a huge part of our life. So Laura, being the oldest, she and I became best friends. And she was the kindest person I've really ever met in my life. I've never met anybody as kind as her. And she had this bubbly personality, and people were drawn to her. And she could make people feel comfortable. And she was very, very giving. And she was a fantastic chef, and she owned her own catering company. And so she fed John and I, you know, often. Once we were married, we lived pretty close by them. But as she... In her 30s, she developed severe, severe depression. And, of course, that can be a symptom, you know, of Huntington's. And she started to drink. And we never really figured out, this was in the 80s, if she drank to self-medicate or if she really, truly was an alcoholic. So, unfortunately, she drank herself to death and had cirrhosis of the liver, and she was on Coumadin, which is a blood thinning medication, and she fell and had a cerebral hemorrhage, and she died at age 41. And it was a huge, huge loss, you know, in our lives.
Sure. Yeah.
No.
Of course.
And then Marsha, she was the second oldest. And she was a very gentle, quiet woman, but very chic. And she was always dressed to the hilt, and she never had a hair out of place. And she was, this is kind of funny, but she was the first person, this is in the 80s, she was the first person I ever knew that had her nails done regularly, and she had her jeans dry cleaned and pressed. But she was always thinking of others and not of herself. She always put people ahead of herself. And she was a professional woman. She worked at AT&T for many, many years as a marketing manager. And unfortunately, she had symptoms very early in her 30s of HD. And she became disabled when she was about 35 years old in 1985. And she struggled with Huntington's for about 13 years and died when she was 49. And we had her up here in Auburn. She lived with us on and off. All the girls lived with us at some point in their life, and I cared for Marcia and Cindy. Marcia was truly missed, also. And then Cindy is the third sister and John's buddy, and she was one of the most positive people that I've ever met in my life, and nothing could ever get her down, nothing. And she was very forgiving, and material things were not important to her. People and her family were important to her. But she had a wanderlust attitude, and she traveled the world and went whenever she could. And she traveled even when she was very, very sick. She just would not give that up. And my children really knew her the most because they were very young when Laura and Marcia were ill and sick. But they knew their Aunt Cindy, and they called her their colorful aunt.
That's very nice. Yeah, so they were the closest in age, your son, your husband and Cindy.
Yes, they were barely 2 years, apart. And she was his big sister, and he followed her around, and they did everything together, and they were really, really, soulmates, I have to say.
Yeah.
And
it must have been so hard watching your husband watching all three of his sisters live with Huntington's disease and pass. It must have been just terrible for him.
It was so hard. But, men handle things differently, too. I think I always felt like he had Huntington's locked away back in his mind somewhere, and didn't think about it like I did. But I did the caregiving, the physical caregiving, and he just could not do that, and I knew that he could not do that for his sisters. But it was so difficult. But at least we got to take care of them, though, Katie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the gift that we could give to them, and I think that's what gave him peace. And then, he told me at times, I just think my sisters were, meant to only have 40 years or 49 years, and they lived their lives loudly and enthusiastically and positively, which helped me live my life. And John is a very, very positive person, too.
Yeah.
So without that in my life,
that,
I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah, I think we learn a lot from our loved ones that are living with Huntington's. I learn stuff from my husband every day. I think that they teach us, how to live different. And So tell me about this a little bit about this memoir. I know that it's not published yet, and so there's lots of stuff you probably can't talk about. But talk about you're in the publishing process. So let's talk about what a little bit.
Okay. Well, my memoir is John and my love story over the past 38 years and how I took the biggest gamble of my life by marrying into this family with Huntington's disease. And, of course, my sister-in-laws are a huge, huge part of the story. And, yes, Huntington's plays a huge part in the story, but my memoir is so much more. It's about relationships. It's about learning how to forgive. It's about unconditional love. It's about kindness. It's the first book that I found, that chronicles the challenges, the stress, the heartache, you know, the joy of living at risk for this, you know, horrific disease. And I think anyone who enjoys a complex life story, especially one that has these colorful, inspiring characters, you know, the four siblings, I think will, you know, enjoy this book. So I am finished writing it and it has been professionally edited right now.
So exciting.
It is very exciting.
I like this whole, because we often always talk about, you know, our loved ones that are, you know, have tested positive in their stories, but this is kind of a different story talking about living at risk.
Yes.
And how that journey was, because he's waited so long to be tested. So living that for that many, how many years? I mean, years. Because he just found out, right?
Yes. And that is the perspective of how I wrote the book, of me watching these people I love trying to live their lives, you know, joyfully at risk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I can't wait till we can get our hands on it. So now.
Well, I've been writing it 6.5 years. And so I'm just so excited to be done, you know, with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so tell me, what made you start to write it? What made you come up with this idea to write this memoir?
Well, I have many, many reasons of why I wrote, you know, this story. And the first one was to honor my sister-in-laws. They were my friends. They were my dear, dear friends. And I wanted to create a legacy for them. They did not have any children. And, you know, looking back, it's a blessing. But Laura, who was married, she had many, many miscarriages. She could not carry a child, you know, through a pregnancy. And that was very difficult, you know, for her to come to grips with that. So I wanted to honor them. And I wanted to write their story for the world to hear their story and how strong they were, and but also for my children, because they didn't get to really know, especially Laura and Marcia, they did not get to know these fantastic women. So, I want this book to be in libraries because I want it to endure beyond my lifetime, so people will know these women. And then the second reason was that I wanted to create a tool that could help with heightening the awareness of Huntington's disease. So I felt like writing a book was a good way to go. And
absolutely.
Then third, I wanted to create a revenue stream that I could funnel the dollars into Huntington's Disease Society of America, because I'm giving all the proceeds to them. And it would continue through the years. As long as people would buy this book, the money would go to HDSA. And then it was, you know, on a selfish level, it was a healing journey for myself. To put this story on paper, it validated my emotions, my life, and the difficulty that we lived with, you know, being at risk and not having an unknown gene status. So through this process, I've been healed. And I can say that I have been healed because I can talk about it now without crying. My voice still cracks at times, like right now, but I, in the past, could not talk to anybody about it. But I have healed, and I feel that I have found peace. And by doing this, it has added tranquility to my life now, and especially since John's been tested, too.
Sure.
And lastly, I wrote it because in writing it, I wanted to share the lessons that I learned. And they were lessons from my sister-in-laws, but they were just lessons also about the experience of living at risk. And I wanted people to have this book who are struggling with, you know, other challenges. Everybody's got challenges in their lives. And the book is sad, yes, but it is also inspirational. And when you think about it, what book is not tragic? Because that's what keeps people turning the pages.
Right. Yes. Yes. True. That's very true.
Yeah.
And I think that it's, I find it really, I think it's amazing that your sister-in-laws will always be, once you get it, like you were saying, once you get it in a book, there, it's forever, you know. People can, or, you know, especially now, this great virtual world we live in. But also prior, you know, when it's on paper and it's published, it lives forever. So what a great honor, you know, for that family for you to have done this and keep their memory alive. And I'm sure I'm sure you felt like they walked this journey of writing this book with you. And
absolutely.
It's very
cool. I have to say one thing. My husband will not be able to read this book, and he's told me that. Because
it's too painful,
you know, for him. And probably some of his cousins, have difficulty in reading it too, because, you know, many of them were involved. You know, I mean, they grew up together and, you know, so, but, you know, that's okay. That's okay, you know, because it's really not about them. It's about these three women and me and my husband.
Right. I think the truth is sometimes really hard, especially when we read it, you know, your husband lived it for sure. So I'm sure it'd be, but I think it's probably going to be hard for people to hear the whole story, because you guys were their character. You know, a lot of the times they lived with you guys, and people probably didn't know everything that was going on.
Oh yeah. People do not, they don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
Sure.
And what goes on single day.
Yeah. And caring for someone with HD, it's, you know, I care for my husband, and it's just, it's tragic, the things you have to watch and see them go through. And it just is heartbreaking. You love them, and to watch them suffer is so hard. You just want to take it away from them.
With HD, you know this, but the losses that happen over the years is what is so difficult. It's not just one loss. It's so many losses. But my sister-in-laws, they all did it so gracefully, and they were never angry. They never said hurtful things. I mean, they never, you know, cursed God for having this disease in their family. So I admire them.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about what's going on with New York.
A couple months ago, I've been blogging and doing social media on many of the platforms about my book, trying to create interest and create an audience. And about 2 months ago, Chris Constantino, who is the Marketing and Communications Director at Huntington's Disease Society of New York, emailed me and said, "I've heard about your book. And I've heard that it has a fundraising component to it." And I was just like, fell on the floor, you know. So we started communication, and I told him, at that time I had not finished it yet. I told him when I thought it would be done, I would send him a copy of the manuscript once it was done. And they want to partner with me on promoting the book. And I am just so thrilled,
That isn't. Yeah, that's amazing.
And I've also reached out to other organizations throughout the world. The Huntington's Association of the UK has my manuscript, and we're discussing about them promoting my book too. And I'm trying to do that in other countries also. And I would like to have my book, I want to print it in several different languages too. So with New York, I'm thrilled with partnering with them. And also, my daughter and my daughter-in-law are both on the HDSA New York City Marathon team. They are running for Huntington's disease. So,
yeah.
And that, that is November 6th of this year, and that is the launch date of my book.
Oh, how fantastic. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're all going to cheer them on, and hopefully I will have a book in my hand at that time. So it's all kind of coming together, and, you know, it's a real good way to promote the book is using the New York City Marathon.
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely. How fantastic. And then, so is it, you were saying other languages. It would be great because it is such an international, when your book is out, we would love at Health Reach International to put it out definitely for you and push it out. And it would be great if it was available in other languages.
Yes, I would like to for sure print it in Spanish.
Sure,
that's the number one language I want to do. And then I'll see after that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Well, this is very exciting. I can't wait. And so when do you think that it'll be available on print for people to be able to purchase?
Well, right now, since I'm a first-time author, I'm trying to get an agent because I'm going traditional publishing. Sending query letters to agents because I need someone to represent me because publishers will not talk to me because I'm a first-time author. They won't take a chance on me, so I need an agent. So I'm in the midst. I've sent out 30 query letters so far. I've gotten 3 rejections. So I'm hoping, you know, to hear by the end of July if I have an agent or not. And I'm also sending out to small presses because sometimes small presses will take first-time authors.
Right.
So, you know, if I don't get anyone, you know, to help me, I will self-publish. And I already know of a person that can help design my book cover and get it formatted and get it printed through CreateSpace, which is a site owned by Amazon where you can have your books printed on demand. So
right.
I will have, you know, books in my hand for the New York City Marathon one way or the other. So
yeah,
that's November 6th. I'll say November.
You know, it's so funny. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It will be November 6th that I have the book available.
Yeah. I know there's so many different, it's so nice to have an agent, but I know that it's also, you know, sometimes I know we did one of our books on CreateSpace and they've been a great thing too. There's definitely pluses and minuses to both ways of going. So,
yes.
Yeah. But if an agent can pick this up, that would be fantastic because it would get it a very broad audience, get it to a very broad audience, which would be great.
And talking to people in the industry, they said to me, you know, Therese, go traditional first. What have you got to lose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, put
right.
your best
yeah.
foot forward and spend time doing that. And then if it doesn't work out, then self-publish.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
And,
I think
you know, Lisa Genova,
no
she,
back.
With her first book, and I think it was the autistic book that she wrote, or maybe it was That's Alice, I can't remember. She did self-publish, and she carried them in the trunk of her car, and then a publisher discovered her and then took her on as a client.
Yeah. It's so interesting. I remember when I wrote my first book, I was looking at, and I love Nicholas Sparks. I think he's amazing, and I was reading his way of being published, and it was so interesting. I mean, before he wrote The Notebook, he had wrote many books prior and The Notebook he'd happened to fall on an agent that it was an agent's assistant and the agent had passed away and she decided to take him on and now look where he is. So it's really a lot of it I think is just finding that right person to take it on.
Yes. And yeah,
but
and
this
just
is
getting it out
story.
There, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Well, well, we're all looking forward definitely to be able to read this this amazing book, and you'll have to keep us updated on everything. So I think we are getting ready to wrap up the show, but do you have any final thoughts before we go?
I think I just like to say, you know, if you find the love of your life, you know, hold on to them. Don't let them go, because the journey with that person is worth it.
Yeah. That's what you guys have been on, is a journey. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. And to the listeners out there, we will keep you updated when the book is available. We'll definitely, we can maybe have Therese back on the show to talk about that. And we would love to do that. And then we will also put it on our platforms and blast it out for everyone to know that it is available. So thank you so much for taking the time for coming on with us today. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Next Thursday, we actually go Help for JHD Live. We are going to be alternating Help for HD Live and Help for JHD Live every other week. If you didn't get a chance last year to tune in to Help for HD Live or Help for JHD Live, we actually ran two shows last week. Nancy Wexler with her sister Alice Wexler actually came on for a little while, was on Help for HD Live. And Help for JHD Live, Denise Hedgel did that show and had Dr. Kyle Fink and Dr. Peg Napolis on. And Melissa Biliardi did the Nancy Wexler show. They were both amazing shows, full of information and a ton of hope. And we at Help for HD International believe that, you know, knowledge imparts hope. And these episodes, I believe, did just that. So those are archived episodes are available on iTunes as well as Blog Talk Radio. And everyone, we look forward to speaking with you guys next week or tuning in next week for JHD Live. Everyone have a safe evening. Bye.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.